Welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast with your hosts, Richard Hill and Matthew Darlitz.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Science of Psychotherapy. My name is Matthew Darlitz, and I'm here with my managing editor, Richard Hill. How are you doing, Richard?
I'm doing very well, Matt. We've got a fantastically interesting talk today because although we are so engaged in the science of psychotherapy and everything else, we have a history in the arts.
We do.
And we're going to be talking to two really interesting people in relation to a very specific area of the arts. And who are they? Tell me.
Yes, Richard. Today we're going to be talking to Caitlin and Craig from the Australian Guild of Screen Composers. Caitlin is the president of the Australian Guild of Screen Composers. And Dr. Craig Morgan is very involved in the mental health of this particular group. Now, when I heard that they were getting quite involved in the mental health issues of screen composers, I became very interested because I have a past in screen composition, and I can see so many parallels between what these people do as people who work in isolation. They are freelancers, they're doing work which can be very stressful, it's irregular work. And so I thought, yeah, I mean, it's a perfect formula for a lot of mental health issues. So let's talk to these guys, find out what's going on in their world, and let's just see what we can learn about this world of mental health in the arts.
Fantastic. Let's go to them right now.
So Caitlin and Craig, thank you so much for joining us here on the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. How are you both?
Very well. Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you very much.
I'm very excited to see you. So Richard here, so I'm very excited to see you because we're getting back into my what excites me in the early part of my life leading me into this. So anyway, keep on, Matt, keep on.
Okay, so we've already introduced you guys to our audience, and I just wanted to just give you an opportunity just to give us a little bit of a brief intro as to your entrance into this whole world of film composing.
For me, Caitlin, hi everyone. I began screen composing about 16 years ago. Before that, I was playing in bands, teaching piano, writing music for the community theatre. And my brother went to film school and he made a great little animation called Mozzie, and he needed some music for it. So I did the music for that without knowing how to even barely open a computer. I did it all on sheet music and used a metronome to time it and recorded it live. And that gave me the taste for writing music for stories and moving images. So that gave me a taste. I then went off to film school, did a postgrad in screen composition, and yeah, the rest is history, as one would say.
As they would say, and as I see on your biography, you have a dizzying array of awards and credits to your name, and we'll point people to that bio. And I must say, I just saw a film recently, Danger Close, that you did the score to.
Yes.
It was very enjoyable.
Great. Well, enjoyable, I'm not sure is the word. It's really, it's a war film, but it really does deal with the horrific legacy of war and PTSD and all the other things involved with that particular battle, the Battle of Long Tan.
Yeah, yeah. Well, congratulations anyway on the score.
Thank you.
Dr. Craig Morgan, your entry into film composition.
Yes, good morning. I've always been a composer. I've always written music for myself on piano with there being no real destination for the music. I was in a band for 6 years. I played bass guitar in the band Alibi, and we were playing around Sydney, and that was very enjoyable. But I needed a better outlet for my music. So in 2010, I went to AFTERS in Sydney, and from then on, I've been scoring a few films. Probably the biggest one that I've done is a film named Pig, which was selected by the Berlin International Film Festival. And I went over to Berlin, and it was a true delight to be there and to watch it in a festival environment. These days, I do more judging of film scores rather than composing. So that's right. That's where I'm at the moment.
Okay, so it would be fair to say for yourself, Craig, and Caitlin, that film composition is your life.
I would hate to be wholly identified just as having film composition as my only life, because I do identify as well as being a mum and a partner and, a lover of walking in nature and things like that. But I would say that it's absolutely my driving passion.
Okay, because what we want to talk about today is for people like yourself who this is their career path, this is what they are immersed in all of the time, and what impact that has on our mental health. And I can see there's lots of ways that we can extrapolate what happens with film composers to many other people who are working for themselves on contractual basis. Who have to hunker down and do a job in isolation. And so I thought it'd be fantastic to talk to you guys, because you're very involved in the mental well-being of your fellow film composers. And we can just talk around some of the issues involved.
Yeah, I know. And of course, that's what excited me, Matt, was that there they are, the film composers, and embracing the fact that they have mental health. And their mental well-being. So they're actually working within their own organisations. Craig was talking to us before. We'll get him to talk more about it now. Because when Matt was saying it's sort of your life, I agree there's many more. But when you're actually writing, when you're right in the groove of it, it is a very, very consuming sort of experience, as happens in a lot of other. I mean, you actually will probably find a lot of our people listening who write scientific papers might actually even say the same thing, that when they're getting into it, it's really consuming and can have a this impact on your lifestyle and how you feel and your emotions. And I'd love to cover that sort of. So what sort of impact does this being in a room with a keyboard or a computer? Dealing with what's going on. You were saying that film was all to do with war and PTSD. There's a lot of stuff that's confronting you in a very small, lonely-ish, if not isolated, sort of space.
Craig, if you don't mind jumping in, what I think we can start with is just I'll explain to you the mechanics of the job, and I think you might find that other people will relate to a lot of the ways that the screen composer may work, many other people may work in a similar way with just a different type of job. But certainly with screen composition, particularly with the rise of technology and the way that is supposed to be making much of our job a lot easier, the end effect of it all is actually essentially meant that we can do a lot more by ourselves in an enclosed space without having to rely on other teams. So for instance, we can make music in a studio all by ourselves. My room is 3x4, and I sit in that maybe 10 hours a day making music with my head between the speakers. I don't need to talk to or deal with anyone else to make an entire score for a film. Now, that said, if I want to turn around a high quality product or a high quality score, I do need to eventually reach out to others and record it, musicians. And those moments in time are the moments we absolutely live for, because that's when we're making stuff with other people. But for instance, with Danger Close, it was essentially at the end of the day, a 10-week turnaround. And a good 5 or 6 of those weeks I spent in my room working on a 2-hour film that a large percentage of that film is a battle where I watched and heard people getting shot and shooting each other and going through the throes of extreme survival for a long period of time. And my job was not to just watch that, but my job was to empathize with those characters. My job was to dig deep and find a way to tell their stories through the medium of music. And so there is inevitably going to have effects on me, not just in terms of the isolation, not just in terms of, running this technology all by myself, that's, it's going to have its own personality that you have to deal with, but also in terms of empathizing with the potential story or the drama that you're working with. And those kinds of things essentially can cause I guess some of the roll-off effects of that for me that I find is, you know, I come away feeling like I need downtime between leaving the studio and getting back home so that I can, you can't just turn that switch on and off because it's an artistic switch. And you do dig deep to a personal space to empathize and find those ways to tell the stories. So, Craig, I'm sure you can speak to, the challenges faced by the broader music industry, but in terms of the mechanics of the job and where why it may happen, I just thought I'd try and explain some of that.
No, I think it's fabulous. I just quickly just want to say that there are therapists sitting out there and saying, that's exactly what happens to me. And we actually have a term called vicarious trauma.
Oh, yes. Exactly.
That is so similar to what goes on in therapy. That's why we're talking to you.
However, Craig, Richard, I'll just jump in there and then I'll hand over to Craig. Sorry. Screen composers don't have supervisors like therapists have supervisors.
That's right.
We have no one to talk to. And if we tried to talk to, say, the director, unless you've got a supportive director, they're just going to come in and tell you what they don't like about the music. So you're going to spend all that time working on that music and empathising with these characters, thinking you've gotten dug deep into this story, and then someone comes along and they say, it's not right.
Yeah.
Do it again.
And you get the criticism as well. So there's several, there's a few therapists who'll say, yeah, I have clients coming back saying, well, that didn't work. So there's a lot of humanity in this experience. Craig, please, you've got jumping thoughts there, I can see.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think someone just said it. If the words vicarious trauma are the unintended emotions that screen composers feel after either composing music or even judging music, because As an assessor of music, I have to invest my time and my energy and my emotions into the film and let the film affect me in a way that the composer and the director intended them to do so. And just last week, I watched a horrible film, but it was a fantastic film, but it was very affecting on me. It had a huge effect on me. I cried all afternoon. But that's what the director and the composer meant for me to experience. And as an assessor of music and someone who judges if things go well or not, this film went well. So, you know, you cannot detach yourself from your emotions. You are part of the experience, whether you're creating music right now or if you are listening to it on the television or on some other delivery system.
So now we've got some therapists out there who are doing music therapy, and there's been a lot of research lately about the impact of music that bypasses a lot of other cognitive processes. It's great for Alzheimer's. So we're dealing with this really interesting world you've got of something which is magical and wonderful, but something which is testing and challenging. Many a time has a tear run down my cheek just listening to something because I thought it was beautiful. But then also harsh. It's really fascinating. But Matt, let's not disconnect you, because you do this very work yourself to lesser degree now. But you've also been trained in film scoring and so on and so forth.
Yes, a long time ago. So what I'm hearing here is vicarious trauma, isolation, not a lot of accolades in the midst of doing the job. So what other elements do we have which can affect our mental health being in this particular kind of work?
Well, I would certainly say being a freelancer, there's a whole other level of risks and risks taken and the risk of speaking out. To speak more to that, what I mean is that being a freelancer, there's many other people out there who want to do the same job. It's considered a glamorous job. Mm-hmm. It's considered a high-end job. People tell me all the time, Caitlin, you live in the dream. And I'm thinking, oh, is this what the dream feels like? Because I could have sworn it didn't look like that in my head when I thought about the dream 16 years ago.
Right.
And there's just so, the reality just has so much more dirt around the edges, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess one thing is you don't want to be seen as someone who can't cope with the job. Because if you do speak out and you do express your trauma or any sort of emotional issues, whether you feel like you identify as someone who has a mental health issue or not, even feeling some sort of emotional strain, you should be allowed to speak out about that, and we should be allowed to be honest within these situations, because I think the main goal is to make sure that we're all at our peak so that we can create the best goddamn product possible, because we want to make great films in Australia. So I think there is certainly a risk for someone who might be going through a tough time, because they're going to be afraid that if they speak out about how tough that time is, that maybe that production company will never hire them again. Maybe even that production company will remove them from the job because they don't think they're fit to complete the job. There's plenty of other people in line to take the job, and then maybe that will taint their... We all constantly live in fear in this industry and this profession that this will be our last job, and there will be no other job around the corner. Because there is no job security. It is feast or famine. So I think that's one of the other issues, a fear of speaking out and a fear of communicating with others over these issues.
Right.
That's excellent. Yeah. Yes.
And Craig, that's what you've done. You've taken grasp of this from within your own industry. Because I suppose I can imagine this. Everyone who... The people who are going to understand this better are yourselves, and you're now doing internal internal industry work. What are you doing with? How are you helping your people?
How am I helping my people? Well, I did a PhD between 2013 and 2016, and it was nothing. It had nothing to do with the mental health of film composers. It was to do with virtual instruments, but that's another topic indeed. But a small finding of my PhD research was screen composers were lonely. I had this situation where I was speaking to I was interviewing a screen composer on the telephone, and I'd ask him all of the questions that I needed to ask, and I said, right, that's it, you know, thanks for being such a good sport. And he said, well, that's great, you know, Do you have 5 minutes? I said, sure. I said, what's wrong? He goes, I'm lonely. That just broke my heart. For a man to come out and say to someone, a stranger like me, I'm lonely, that was a real call for help.
Yeah.
So I started to take in more empirical research around mental health in our industry. And I found that there was being work done, and those in our industry are 5 times more likely to experience symptoms of depression than the general population,
mm-hmm.
10 times more likely to experience anxiety than the general population, and suicide attempts are double that of the general population.
Wow.
So when I heard this data, I had to do something. So I put together a presentation. I met with the leadership of the AGSC, and I think that was the Caitlin, and I asked, can I do an information session on the mental health of us, you know, and what we can do to look after each other. So I thought information was the first thing that we needed to arm ourselves with. We needed to equip ourselves with the information to do with our own mental health.
And I will say, Craig, the positive thing about making that a community event, a community issue, rather than just an isolated single person issue, was that both of those events that we put on in Melbourne and Sydney, your mental health workshops or presentations, they were oversubscribed.
Yes.
People came to them. You know, people want to talk.
Yeah.
People do feel lonely, and all it takes is, you know, providing one vessel or one place, you know, giving them the talking stick just for a second, and it can occur.
Yeah, and definitely this is an at-risk population given those statistics that Craig was just saying. So
that's right.
See, I think also this very important, exactly, I just want to amplify what you said, that each community has the capacity to engage with itself, and no community understands it better than itself. And this is a wonderful thing that other people can take great inspiration, I suppose, is one thing, but also encouragement of the fact. And we were talking before about Are You Okay Day. This aspect of, we don't have to go bananas about stuff. Let's just talk about it a little bit. Hey, how are you going?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because with in the isolated sort of work environment that screen composers are in, I'm guessing that a lot of them will think, oh, well, it's just me.
You know? Exactly. That's right.
And so to be connected and to understand, well, no, it's not just me. A majority of people feel like this. And to seek that support, because it's about getting connected, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's very easy to think it's just me, because if you look online at everybody's, you know, social profiles, they look like they're succeeding all over the place, you know, and you're not. So it's easy to just think, well, everyone else has got it fine, so it really is just me, so I better not speak out because I'm just going to put a target on my back.
Right.
Exactly. The rise of social media in the last couple of years has just amplified this problem tenfold.
Yes.
Caitlin just nailed it on the head there when she said everyone else looks like they're doing a great job and they're all succeeding, and I'm not going to speak out because I don't want to identify myself as someone who's, you know, I've got an issue here, you know, I feel lonely and I can't talk to someone about this, and I don't want to be the only one. So we're trying to do is to make a platform for people to speak to each other, to raise this, as to de-stigmatize this issue, just by shining some light on it.
And I'm guessing as a freelancer, it's tricky because you don't want to be seen as not having it all together and being highly successful, because that is, as a freelancer, you want to project a certain amount of success, right?
Producers need to have confidence when they hire you.
Right.
They have confidence that you're going to get the job done and you're going to get it done well for them, because the one thing about particularly the film industry is it's a high risk industry. It's millions of dollars making a film, millions and millions. So the way that they hire is somewhat risk adverse, and they will hire on a known name. They'll hire on someone they know has done the job in the past, rather than the potential of someone being able to do the job.
Again, so many parallels to lots of other industries, but certainly the therapeutic industry. Now we have all kinds of protective mechanisms. I mean, I know when I go to psychotherapy conferences, I feel like handing my card out a lot. supervision that's actually mandated into our professional practice.
That's right.
Where you really have to go and talk to someone every now and again. And this sort of thing, I imagine, from what you're saying, is not only not there, but I would, by the sounds of things, pretty discouraged, or even not looked upon with as a favourable thing.
Absolutely.
I think in the future, in maybe in 5 or 6 years, perhaps it may be a mandated thing that we may need, you know, occasional regular sessions with some sort of counsellor, with some sort of supervisor who knows the warning signs of mental health and can say, aha, you know, you're depressed, you know, so, you know, get to the doctor, because, you know, you can do all these things. I wouldn't be surprised that in a couple of years' time, this an oversight body may force us.
Yeah, I love this idea, Craig. I mean, could you imagine that if anyone with an ABN who's a sole trader or a freelancer has a free counselling service through the government once a year or twice a year? Could you imagine what that would do for our country and our people? Mm.
The film industry itself. I mean, you just need a couple of $1,000 out of every film budget.
Just like, let's
good
see.
Luck.
A couple of $100, $50. I'll take 10. Interesting.
We have in films, depending on the size of the film. I mean, there's actually budgetary aspects for apprenticeships for some of the Sparkies and the things. You're your best boy, really. That's just an apprenticeship type of job. Interesting possibilities. Interesting possibilities is all we can talk about.
Jim. It's very interesting. I know Caitlin touched on this before, and that's there is a culture of non-collaboration between screen composers, and that is mostly because of the technology. The technology has come so far in the last 15 years that many 13-year-olds in their bedroom with an iPad, with an iMac Pro, could probably do an acceptable score to someone's commercial and with GarageBand. And that's all inbuilt into a MacTop Pro. But they don't know the craft of screen music composition. They're not educated in the craft of screen music composition. Screen composers themselves have specific knowledge about what to do, when to do it, and when to stop.
Right.
So, but there is a poor culture of communication. I think we also touched on this before. It's stressful when we are working because of deadlines.
True. Yes.
And it's stressful when we're not working.
Right. Okay. So there's no let up to the stress.
That's right.
It's always there.
A screen composer often will do, when they're on a job, a 10 to 12 hour day at the very minimum, and they'll do 6, maybe even sometimes 7 days a week. It can go up to 16 hour days. I know people who worked around the clock because of the sheer volume of high quality music that's needed within a very short period of time. And unfortunately, the more that we service those types of schedules, the more those schedules are served back to us in future productions. And it's becoming the norm now that a screen composer can turn around a 1 hour worth of music in 1 to 2 weeks. And I exaggerate when I say two, I should just really say the 1 week, which is an extraordinary amount of music. And that takes a long time because you need to place every note. So, it is stressful when you're on a job because you need to come up with that ethereal creative genius, but you've got no time for the muse.
Yes, I was just thinking that when does the muse, does it sometimes just pass you by?
Yes, so it's really just, you just need to pray to the gods that they will shine upon you and give you the artistic notes, and they just come out super quickly,
Come out of your fingers.
Literally there's a whole neuroscience background that 2 o'clock, 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning can be an extraordinarily fantastic creative time. Is that something that you find as composers, that sometimes you've had this hell of a day and the thing, and then bang, in the middle of the night, you're up with a really good idea but exhausted?
Well, I think I definitely know some composers who work their best at night, and they say, this is the time I work the best, absolutely. So they work all day doing paperwork, and then as soon as 5 o'clock hits, that's when they start writing. But for me, I don't quite have that luxury because I'm a parent and, a partner, and I have, a lifestyle outside that things that I need to look after outside my composing career. So I find that my best time, actually, my golden time, is 7 a.m. in the morning.
There's another interesting time as well, and in the ultradian rhythms and the four-stage cycle that people have heard me talk about, there's relationship to that early morning thoughts stuff. So what I'm doing is I'm just hearing and seeing, both as a performer myself and now as a therapist, just the naturalness of what's going on in here. And this is like, this is not surprising at all and shouldn't be surprising to anybody, but it will be, because they'll go exactly as you're saying. Oh, yeah, but they're living the dream.
Right, yeah.
Do you mean, when you say naturalist, do you mean like instinctual? Because it's certainly a very instinctual job.
Yes. Well, it's natural that all the I do talk a lot about naturalness, about we have a natural set of cycles. We have a natural set of ways in which things rise and fall. We have a culture that pushes us to go against that, which diminishes us sometimes. I'm sure there are scores that you get out on time, but you go, but that was crap, you know.
Yeah, I just needed a bit more time. Or
good,
just
good crap.
A proper sleep in between, a couple of nights sleep in between.
Yeah, so these things.
And that's what you're talking about, Craig, too, which are coming out in the statistics. And this opening up of possibility, just a place where people in the industry can privately and perhaps anonymously seek some kind of venting of this their own personal state.
Well, yes, that's right. It's as we touched on before, the vicarious trauma around if you're writing something and it's very beautiful, you might have a moment and you go, oh gee, that was really great. You know, I wish I could have that moment all the time.
Yes.
I'm the first to say it. I'm not Beethoven 100% of my day. I can get through some things, but things ebb and flow for me.
Mm. But then Beethoven, they all hated his ninth, you know.
I guess one of the other things that feeds into all of this is the imposter syndrome.
Right.
Most composers, I think if you really dig deep, is they have, I mean, we all know where the notes come from. We all know how we put them on the page. But really, I think if I really go to a truly honest place of how, where they came from and how they went there, there is something intangible about that and about how it came out. And so a lot of times you can just excuse the good scores away to being lucky. I was lucky that it came to me at that moment in time. And so you think that, oh God, here's another one. I have to start with a blank page again and I have to write 50, 60 pieces of music for this. Where's it going to come from? That last one, that was just lucky. It was just the planets aligned for that one. Yeah. This one, it's not going to be the same. You know, I know that, and most composers, the more you write for film and TV, the more you know where your shortfalls are rather than you know where your strengths are. And maybe this is just me, but I certainly, the more I know, the less I know. I hate to bring a cliche into it, but it really is one of those jobs that is this bottomless well of extraordinary art and application of the craft. And so the more you do it, the more you realize you don't know all those things. And so the more you can tend to feel like an imposter within the craft.
Right. And how do you feel when the job is finished, you're sitting in the cinema and you're watching the completed work? Are you still judging your work?
Absolutely. That is, yeah. I don't know about, I would love to ask other composers about this. I've never asked them that question.
Do you look sideways and wonder if anyone else noticed that bit?
I reckon the next time you go to an opening night or something, if you know the composers in the room, you don't know what they look like, look for the person who's shrunk right down in their seat and like they've got a worried look on their face and they're constantly turning their head, checking the 5.1 surround speakers.
Because, right, right.
You know, that's the other thing about ingesting information in an auditory fashion and moving music or sound from one room to another. Sound itself changes the very nature and timbre of sound and the way it is interpreted through the brain changes depending on the room you're in. So you might have created this beautiful music in one room, but then mixed it in another room, which sounds great in that room finally. And then it's gone into the final film mix in another room. And it's gone through another couple of iterations. Mm-hmm. And then finally you hear it in the cinema and the cinema hadn't been Dolby corrected for 5 years.
And that's not what you meant.
Exactly. But you've got, you know, 600 people in the cinema listening to that with you, go, and you're like, but how do I stop this? You
know?
Louder. Where are the French horns in this part?
Exactly. You know, they were there when we mixed it in, you know.
I worked in the recording industry. I was a disc cutter. I used to cut the original vinyls, the acetates for the vinyl. And we would have to change the mix in order to get it onto vinyl. I mean, and I know digital changed things for all those people. I'm just expanding the thoughts, Matt, of just to people listening. Come on, this is what's going on. We're all doing this. We all relate to this. Just take out film composer and put in therapist. And a lot of this talk is like, yeah, they're talking about me.
Mm-hmm. I will say my solution to that particular problem for anyone who's out there and shrinking in their seats is I do find if the audience has still laughed, if they've still cried, if they've still clapped at the end, the story is still spoken. So whether you hear those French horns or not, it still touched someone's heart. And for me, that I've gotten to a point where if it does resonate, no matter if it's perfect or not, I'm happy.
Okay. Same as when your client walks out of the room. Beautiful.
That's right.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So there's a certain amount of letting go of maybe the perfect.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. You've got to say, this is the best that I've done. This is the best that I've done with what I've got and with the budget that I have and with the time that I've had. This is the best. This is the best that I've done.
Right. The sound engineer could have done better, but it's the best I've done.
Good one.
Craig, have you got some programs coming up, or have you got some programs that people can engage with? Is there something specific happening, or is this something that still builds and rises and falls? What's going on in the work you're doing with this at the moment?
Thanks for asking, because this Thursday is Are You Okay Day, and for the last 2 years I've volunteered my time and advertised to the wider community that Call Craig on Are You Okay Day is a great way to reach out confidentially and just have a chat with someone who knows what you're going through and someone who can give you the contact telephone numbers of professional counsellors should the need arise. But I'm encouraging people to call me on Are You Okay Day so that, you know, if they're lonely and if they just want to talk to a friend or a friendly voice, I'm that person. So
wonderful.
Please reach out and call me. But if I detect anything that needs professional help, I'll direct them to our business partner Support Act in
Very
Melbourne.
Good.
Okay. They've got a
support
helpline.
Yeah,
and
brilliant.
They are excellent. They've been wonderful through all this.
And we also have on Wednesday, the 18th of September at APRA in Melbourne, a managing mental health workshop in conjunction with the Australian Screen Sound Guild. And Support Act are also a part of that. And it's a seminar just about the signs and symptoms of common mental health issues in our industry.
Mm. Okay.
So sounds head to like our website, head to the AGSC website and you can find, it's free. Anyone's allowed to come. It's really for our industry and all our communities. So head to our website and just click the link and register.
Okay. Some good things happening there. Well, thank you so much, guys. I'm just watching the time here. I think this has been a very valuable conversation, not only in terms of screen composers, but as we've said, anyone that is working as a freelancer, working by themselves, there are these challenges. And for us as therapists, you know, to be very aware in a lot of respects, they're very much like we are in our world of psychotherapy, you know, where we work in very much similar conditions.
And I think that lovely message, even if there is a bit of it that is living in the dream, you do wake up. And that's always a time when you need to get some help, and you guys are doing that. And you know, it's a fabulous model for other people. Pastoral care, the first point of care, is always best done, and then recommendations. So, gee, thanks, Craig, for just noticing that little tiny bit in your PhD. All this brilliance, but what you noticed was the humanity.
Agreed. Yeah. I would like to absolutely publicly thank Craig for all the work he has done to date for our community and with the AGSC.
You're fantastic.
You're a magic fella.
It wouldn't be possible without the great leadership of the AGSC. So
thank you. But it is. It needs
several sparks. It's a complex system. It's a community of stuff. And we love each individual. And Matt and I we're both sitting here going, oh, far out. Mm-hmm. Wow. So exciting to see. It really is. And we're so pleased to be able to spread this knowledge. But for now, there's a lot here. But I think people are going to go back and listen to this one again, Matt.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, Caitlin and Craig, any last words before we wrap it up?
I'd just like to say, if you're a screen composer and you think that you're alone, you're certainly not alone with your feelings. Reach out. The Support Act number is 1-800-959-500, and it's a free confidential counselling service for musicians and professional composers, anyone in the music industry. So if you think you're alone, please reach out if you need help.
Okay, fantastic.
And Caitlin?
I will just say, do what you love and love what you do and look after all those things that help you do those things. And that includes talking to others.
Yep, no matter how much of a genius you are, it's really nice to have other people too.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Caitlin and Craig, thank you so much for being on the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. It's been fantastic talking to you both.
All right.
Very much.
Bye. Thanks for now. Thanks for having us. Bye.
How fascinating, Matt. Really, I said it a number of times during the talk because I wanted people to get it. But if you just shift your thinking a little bit and just change the titles on the characters in there, there were therapists, there were people who work in personal single office industries, people mm-hmm. who work at home. So many parallels there. But look at what they've done. They've taken the bull by the horns, said something has to be done, and they're doing something. Great inspiration for everybody. Please, everybody, I want to go back and listen to that one again. That was great.
Fantastic. I mean, how important is it that we have these frameworks, like these guilds, like the Australian Guild of Screen Composers, that can provide this support? I mean, as therapists, we take it for granted that we have, support. It's actually mandated that we have supervision and we have this sort of support around about us. But there's many industries that don't have that. And so good to see these guys building that for themselves, to being able to identify that there are mental health issues to be mitigated.
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff there, Matt, and that's right. We all need to be assisted. We all need to be engaged. We all need to act in an interpersonal, social, community manner. How do we build that? Well, step by step. And certainly, if anybody's in a group, in a professional or an area where they're feeling, I've got this, but I don't know what to do, just contact us here. Let's see who we can connect you up with. This is really, I'm getting very enthusiastic about what this inspiration from what can be done for an individual group, mm-hmm. An individual profession, and who better to help a profession and understand a profession than the profession themselves. So this is great. So anyway, but we better go for now because we could wax on about this all day, but thanks everybody for listening, and we'll head off and look forward to next week.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks, Richard. Thanks, everybody. See you next week on the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. For more great science, go to thescienceofpsychotherapy.com.